On tonight's show, it's our opening night special.
Greer putting the ball on a play. He gets it out deep and Havlicek steals it. Over the stand zone. Havlicek stole the ball. It's all over.
The Celtics start hot. The James Gang, LeBron and Bronny, make history. Paolo Banchero with a big game in the opener. And much more to come. Everyone, and welcome back to the Crossover Across Time podcast. I, of course, am your host, Karsten Kiel. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. Both previous listeners, brand new listeners alike, thank you for tuning in. We really can't thank you enough for your support on the show. And today's show is our opening night special. We are just about wrapped up with the first two nights of NBA action. Of course, at the time that I'm recording this, there's one game still currently in progress. I was following that right at the end of the fourth quarter, hoping to get some of the stats punched in just in time before recording, but wouldn't you know it, that game went to overtime, and that should be a noteworthy game to talk about towards the end of the episode when that game finally finalizes its score, I suppose. Firstly, also, we should give a big congratulations to the New York Liberty of the WNBA. I don't believe we've had a chance to recognize their championship that they won, I believe, earlier this week. So congratulations in order. A couple of big name star players. I know there was some, at least from what I've heard, I didn't have a chance to see any of the finals games, but some fans complaining online about some officiating discrepancies. I mean, you're going to get that with a lot of playoff situations especially. So not having seen it, I don't know what the truth or non-truth is in that matter. But they won the championship. Congratulations to them. Talented team from what I know. So with that being said, let's go ahead and waste no more time. Let's actually get into today's show. And we're going to start with our starting lineup. And again, if I'm fumbling with the graphics and everything, I'm still getting into the flow of this with the video podcast side of things and how that's all going to work. Again, starting lineup in name replaces what we had before as our 5-on-5 drill. We're just talking about the games from the past couple of nights of action. However, with it being opening night, we're just going to go through every game and talk about the big details there. And it starts on Tuesday night, last night, with the Boston Celtics hosting the New York Knicks, and of course that meant the defense of their, the beginning of the defense of their 2024 NBA championship. They had the raising of the banner, the ring ceremony, and then the game got started. And the Knicks, of course, a promising team in the Eastern Conference with all the moves they made, bringing in Towns and Bridges, but it just didn't seem to matter. The Boston Celtics dominated the game. Let's go ahead and get some actual box scores pulled up for you. I know for sure that it was dominant. I believe 29 is the number I'm looking for, and that was the number of three-pointers the Celtics made in this game. It was 29. They did attempt 61, which is unbelievable. The last 13 of those were all misses, so right at the end when they had the chance to break the record, couldn't quite do it, but still phenomenal to tie that type of record. The most three-pointers made by a team in a game in NBA history, and quite an auspicious start. The Celtics just in a complete rhythm. Sensational performance throughout. Jason Tatum led them with 37 points, 10 assists, steal and a block. He was 8 of 11 from 3, just came out red hot, you know, firing on all cylinders. They got 24 points from Derek White, who was 6 of 10 from 3. Jaylen Brown, 23 points. He was 5 of 9 from 3. Drew Holiday, 4 of 6 from 3 for 18 points. All five starters in double figures. And then also Sam Hauser off the bench, 10 points. He made a couple threes. So just unbelievable shooting. You look at the Knicks, there's good things. I mean, Brunson, decent scoring game to start, 22 points, tied with Miles McBride actually coming off the bench. He probably had a better game, honestly, than Jalen Brunson did as far as overall performance. Both players with 22 points. McBride, 8 of 10 from the floor, and he made 4 of his 5 three-point attempts. He should be a big piece, at least early on, it looks like it, for the Knicks bench. They got 16 points as well for Mikal Bridges, who was 2 of 7 from 3, so he did get going late. I know early in the game he struggled with the three-pointer, and there's still a lot of discussion about the changed shot form and shot mechanics for Bridges. That will be a conversation, I'm sure, for a while, until the percentages start to show how it's actually affecting his play. 12 points each for Josh Hart, Karl-Anthony Towns, and then 11 off the bench for Cameron Payne. Knicks didn't have the worst game in the world. They scored 109 points. They had some offense. They had, I think defensively was certainly an issue, and especially the perimeter defense. But they're also playing the Celtics, who, again, sensational start. That gets us going with our first kind of talking point. Can the Celtics keep this up? This is a heck of a pace to set in the very first game. Obviously, they're not going to be making 29 three-pointers every single game. But there have been conversations about the Celtics being able to break potentially the record for most threes by a team in a season. That could be on the table for this squad, a very talented team that, of course, retained everybody from a championship-winning team. And, again, starting off the season hot, I think that they can be very good and should be very good. There might be some games they lose along the way, of course, but I don't want to preclude or not preclude, but I guess spoil this too much. Today, of course, we have our weekly predictions, and I'm going to be touching on the Celtics in that segment later on in this very episode. So we will get there. There's arguments on both sides of it. With Porzingis out, that definitely will limit the Celtics, especially with their front court depth. But with what they had and Horford playing as well as he is at his age, Tillman and Cornet are decent backups, with some different looks you can get from either of those guys. So I think it's certainly possible. And again, I'll be talking about that a little bit more later in the show. That was our first game from Tuesday night. Let's go to the second game here. And this one perhaps even more talked about, even with a defending champion taking the floor for their banner ceremony. But, of course, the LeBron James, Bronny James storyline, a big talking point this season. And it was expected that they would, you know, it seemed like a good idea to get Bronny out there in this first game to get a lot of those conversations calmed down. The speculation about when he would play, what might happen. He's gotten into a game. They've made that history. So that's phenomenal, first of all. I think that that's a great story. I still don't fully understand. I mean, I get it, but it is confusing to see so many people online so very negative about this achievement. And I understand the questions about Bronny as a player on his own, fully being ready for the NBA stage. You can make arguments for and against it. I think his potential is very high, which is definitely an asset. You know, regardless of how he got here, to be on the same floor with his father, something that we've never seen before, is pretty special. And I don't think that we've really come that close to seeing it in the past. So to have this come to pass, and then, of course, the Griffies of baseball legend in attendance because of their similar achievement as a father-son duo on the same team. I believe that year they were on the same team. They hit back-to-back home runs. That sounds like a correct trivia fact that I've heard at some time or another. So I think it's sensational. And besides the point, the Lakers got the win anyways. You know, I think that's the important thing. Bronny played big minutes early in the second quarter. That was the interesting part. You know, you think if there's questions about him being a full roster time, roster spot player, that he would be fourth quarter minutes when the game is decided. But they got him in there in the second quarter, not for very many minutes. He played just under 3 minutes in this game, attempted a couple shots, missed them both. And he got a rebound. That's something. He's got a big time stat, you know, big time minutes stat under his belt. I'm not trying to be patronizing, but he's started to accumulate stats in the NBA. He's been playing NBA minutes now. And so, again, that'll quell a lot of the conversations. But the Lakers got the win. great game and great first showing for J.J. Redick. Another big storyline here. The first time head coach coaching with the Lakers here. 3-point-wise, they definitely want to improve their efficiency. They were 5 of 30 for just under 17%, but they got good attempts and good looks. I think that they're going to find the rhythm of that, and that's still going to be an emphasis for the Lakers. Anthony Davis, he just dominated the game, though. That's all there is to it. He thought that he had been snubbed last year in the Defensive Player of the Year race, and he was certainly a top candidate. This game, 36 points, 16 rebounds, 3 blocks, 4 assists, as well as a steal. And he also got the job done at the free throw line, 13 of 15 from the free throw line in this one. Good supporting numbers from Rui Hachimura, 18 points and 5 boards for him. LeBron, only 16 points in the game, 5 boards, 2 blocks, though, getting it done defensively. They got 12 also from Austin Reeves, who had 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and then 10 points off the bench for Jackson Hayes. As far as the scoring for the Timberwolves, they were led by Anthony Edwards, 27 points, 5 of 13 from 3. Felt like he settled a lot for 3-pointers in this game. That perhaps limited the Timberwolves in terms of getting a real offensive rhythm. And I don't want to pin that all on him, but it could have been a factor. It just felt that way, and I think they talked about it on the broadcast a little bit. They got 16 points from Julius Randle in his Timberwolves debut. He also had 9 boards, 4 assists. Decent start, I would say. 13 points, 14 boards for Rudy Gobert with a block. He is looking to have another big season, try and get right back in that Defensive Player of the Year conversation. And then 3 guys off the bench with double-figure scoring. Naz Reid with 12, Nickeil Alexander-Walker with 14, and Dante DiVincenzo with 10. The Timberwolves didn't shoot that great from 3 either. They were just under 32%, made 13, but they were better than the Lakers in that category. Still didn't get them the win, but it's worth noting, I suppose. So that was the 2 games from Tuesday night, and then let's jump to tonight's games. And it's only now that I'm finally remembering on the broadcast and on the podcast here to actually explain this bit of change with Season 3 as well. I've had it on my notes and documentation. I've had a couple episodes where I've finished recording and realized I need to talk about it. The first couple seasons of the podcast, if we were doing a Monday episode, we would talk about Friday, Saturday, and Sunday's games. We're changing that to try and be a little bit more timely with what we're covering. With a Monday episode, we'll now be talking about Saturday, Sunday, and Monday's games. So we're recording later at night, but we're getting coverage right as games complete so that it's going to be much more timely. You're tuning in the very next morning or even that night right after games have completed. So hopefully that will allow us to be a little bit more relevant and up to date with what we're covering. So just wanted to clarify that. And now, of course, it's Wednesday night. We're talking Wednesday games. We're in overtime. The Suns-Clippers game still going on. That's our final game, and we'll wrap that up whenever that game finishes during the recording of this episode. In the meantime, let's start right at the top. The Indiana Pacers win in Detroit against the Pistons, 115-109, your final score there. Detroit had a 12-point lead in this game. They falter. They had some miscues. They had 6 players on the court at one point in this game. Not a great look for a team that had such a disappointing year last year, and especially the losing streak last year. They're very much looking to put that behind them. Not a great omen if you're a fan, and certainly a superstitious fan, perhaps. It was a close game regardless. Multiple lead changes in this one. Let me make sure I get this exact for you. 13 lead changes, 4 ties in the game. Pacers brought it back in the fourth quarter to get the win. It was a 33-19 advantage in the fourth quarter for the Pacers to seal the win in this game. Pistons were led by Cade Cunningham. Strong game to start the season. 28 points, 8 assists. Can he be a name in perhaps the All-Star conversation? I thought he could deserve a little bit of conversation last year, even with how poor the Pistons were playing. Didn't quite happen, but if they're marginally better, maybe, and if his numbers rise, maybe he can get a little bit of conversation in that discussion, perhaps. 5 other players scored in double figures for the Pistons, including Jaden Ivey with 17, Tim Hardaway Jr. and Malik Beasley off the bench both had 14 points, and then Tobias Harris and Jalen Duren, 13 points for each of those guys. Duren also with 13 rebounds and 4 assists. Again, solid production for the Pistons. Excuse me. They got decent offense. They scored almost 110 points, but the Pacers' offense is their calling card, at least from what they did last year. Not the craziest numbers all around. Miles Turner led them 20 points, 9 boards, and 4 blocks. Great all-around game. Tyrese Haliburton with 15 points, 4 assists, and 3 steals, not to mention 2 blocks. Big defensive game, 3 turnovers, though, so not the greatest assist-to-turnover ratio for the guy that was so excellent at that last year. 19 points each for both Pascal Siakam and Bennedict Mathurin. Siakam, a near triple-double, actually. 9 assists and 8 rebounds. They also got 14 off the bench from TJ McConnell. So just good enough all-around production. Pacers a little bit more talented, a little deeper, a little bit more experienced, able to get the win there in Detroit. Then we jump to the game in Toronto. The Cleveland Cavaliers visiting. They beat the Raptors wearing the throwbacks, the Vince Carter throwbacks. Didn't seem to matter. The Cavs won by 30 in Toronto, 136-106, your final there. It was also a 30-point advantage in the paint, perhaps much of the story there. Poor game for Scottie Barnes. Not kind of the game you'd like to see from him as the star player. 9 points, 6 boards, and 5 assists. 3 of 14 from the floor. Definitely a rough go of things in this one. Even worse news for the Raptors, Emmanuel quickly did leave at some point during this game with a right pelvic contusion. No specific updates on timetable or what to expect there. Certainly we're going to wish him the best with that injury at this time. This is actually the first time that Cleveland has won in the 5 season opening matchups they've had against Toronto. So that's nice to, I suppose, get that little fact under their belt. Raptors led by Chris Boucher, actually coming off the bench. He had 18 points to lead them in scoring. 16 from Grady Dick. Decent game after an up and down rookie year, I would say. Meanwhile, for the Cavs, they were led by Evan Mobley, 25 points. All round stat, you know, stat sheet stuffing here. 9 boards, 3 blocks, 2 steals, and 3 assists. That's great all-around production. And the scoring especially, I think that they want to see a lot more offensive production from Evan Mobley, which will help them elevate their team's game as a whole. It'll make things easier for Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell, by the way, 21 points in this one, 3 assists, 3 steals, efficient shooting. They got 19 off the bench from Caris LeVert, and then also 14 from both Ty Jerome and Jarrett Allen. Allen also with 4 blocks. So defensively, Cleveland really getting the job done there in their win in Toronto. Excuse me. Next, we jump to the first of the ESPN doubleheader. This was in Philadelphia as the Sixers hosted the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Bucks getting the win on the road. Of course, the Sixers without both Joel Embiid and Paul George, both sidelined with knee issues. Not a great start for a team that is hoping to really break through in that Eastern Conference, get past that second round, which has been a little bit of a bane of their existence, if you will. For the Sixers, they were led by Tyrese Maxey, as you would expect, in the absence of the two other stars of their trio. 25 points for him with 6 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and a block. They got 21 from Kelly Oubre Jr., who wasn't super efficient, but he did get the points on the board. They got 13 off the bench from Kyle Lowry, 12 from Kayla Martin off the bench, 10 points, 13 rebounds from Andre Drummond starting in place of Embiid. Not bad, but you look at what the Bucks did and what Lillard and Giannis did, and this is what they want to see if they're a team that's going to contend in this Eastern Conference. Lillard with 30 points, 9 boards, and 6 assists. He was 6 of 12 from 3-point range. Great all-around production. And then Giannis, 25 points, 14 rebounds, and 7 assists. All the other starters alongside him, Torian Prince, Brook Lopez, Gary Trent Jr., all in double figures as well. Not to mention Bobby Portis with 16 points off the bench. You know, defensively, Brook Lopez really set the tone. 6 blocks for him. Great start. And Bobby Portis defensively solid as well. Giannis only with 1 block, no steals, not the norm. And if Giannis and Lopez can set the defensive tone inside, that can go a long way towards improving this Bucks team defensively, which is their big question mark. I think offensively they weren't too bad last year. It was the defense that was concerning, perhaps. And even though he didn't have stats in this category, Torian Prince should help with that as well. So a nice win for the Bucks in this game. And also just a quick side note for Gershon Yabusele, who had the nice Olympic debut or Olympic series rather for France in this past summer. He had 10 points in his Sixers debut, 3 assists, 3 steals, and 4 rebounds. nice little game for him. He could be a nice rotation player for the Sixers, especially if they're going to have guys like Embiid and Paul George miss time. That's the quick recap there. Let's jump to the Orlando Magic in Miami facing the Heat, classic Southeast Division matchup. The Florida teams going at it, and the Orlando Magic, perhaps a changing of the guard here, winning this game in Miami, 116-97, the final score here. Paolo Banchero, big game, 33 points and 11 rebounds in this one. We're going to talk about Banchero's game a little more in detail and about what he can bring to this Magic team. But we'll actually go over some of the other notes from this game first. Miami Heat had a halftime ceremony in this game to honor Pat Riley with their new, newly branded Pat Riley Court. So I think that's a great moment. Again, well deserved. But for the most part, it was all Orlando in this game. Looking at the stats for Miami, Jimmy Butler, 3 points in the game, 5 assists, 4 boards, a couple defensive stats. He was 1 of 8 from the floor. That's troubling, especially where there's been conversation about his increased age and perhaps some strain in the relationship between him and Pat Riley. Not a great start. I don't think that this will continue, but it is concerning to have this type of a start in some ways. Nikola Jovic actually starting in this game, 15 points and 5 boards for him. Leading scorer for the Heat, though, Terry Rozier, 19 points, 6 boards, 5 assists. They got 14 from Tyler Hero and then 13 off the bench from Jaime Jaquez Jr. Just not a ton of offense. The team shot below 40% from the floor. And then you look at Orlando, 18 of 49 from 3. A lot more threes than perhaps we're accustomed to with Orlando. That was a big deficit in their game. I think they were in the bottom group, maybe even last in three-pointers made or percentage or something in that category last season. So this could be a sign of improvement in that area. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, although he was 0 of 5 in this game, should hopefully help with that. This should hopefully be the exception and not the rule for KCP. He struggled in this game. The guys around him, though, solid. We mentioned Banchero. They also got 23 from Franz Wagner, 4 boards, 4 assists. He also had 2 steals and a block. They got 18 off the bench from Gary Harris, who was 6 of 9 from 3, really efficient from the three-point line. And then they got 11 from Jalen Suggs, 10 points from Anthony Black in his sophomore season. Perhaps he could step up with some increased offensive output off the bench. That would be a nice boost for them, especially with the loss of, as weird as it sounds, Markelle Fultz. He did struggle a lot of times in Orlando, but the point guard spot is a small question for me. It looks like Suggs is kind of the de facto point guard, and then whether it's Anthony Black or Cole Anthony, probably the more conventional choice, but both those guys at point guard spots should help them offensively, certainly. So I think that makes a lot of sense. It was really the third quarter for Orlando that won it. It was 39-18 for the Magic, and that's their biggest quarter advantage that they've had since 2010. So that was a pretty special footnote. But again, it was Banchero leading the way. He became one of 6 instances and one of only 5 players in Magic history to have 30 or more points in a season opener. Those other guys, pretty special club. Tracy McGrady did it twice, then Shaquille O'Neal, Penny Hardaway, and Nick Anderson, a lot of Orlando Magic all-time great players. And again, this leads into the conversation about Banchero, a first-time All-Star last year, powered the Magic into a top 5 spot in the Eastern Conference, the first-round matchup with the Cavs that they almost won despite the offensive struggles. That was really what kind of did them in the end. Can he continue to elevate his game? I feel like he gets forgotten a lot in the world of Victor Wembanyama and, of course, the upcoming draft class with Cooper Flagg. Those prospects, along with Chet Holmgren and many others, getting some more praise and attention than this Banchero guy, who also went first overall, was a first-time All-Star last year and led his team into the playoffs. I have been high on him for the last little while. I think it was the beginning of season 2 where I really started to tune into his potential and what he can do for this Magic squad. And this is a great start for someone who is looking to continue to elevate his game and therefore elevate his team. I like what they've got coaching staff-wise. They're building a solid lineup. Seems like that they enjoy playing with each other. And Banchero, you know, I think that there's going to be a turning point where people realize, hey, this kid is actually really, really good, and he is helping elevate his team, and he's doing it with, he's mainly offensive, but he's, you know, fitting in with a defensive-oriented team, and there's a lot to like there. He's not a very loud player. He's just confident, and he gets it done with his play. Like Bancaro a lot, like to see that game from him. So that's the note there on that one. Great win for Orlando to start the season. Let's jump to the next game. The Atlanta Hawks winning at home against the Brooklyn Nets despite some hard fouls, let's say. Nick Claxton with just a straight-up clothesline for the most part on a Dyson Daniels fast break. Daniels justifiably angry getting in the face of Claxton. They had to be separated. It was pretty deep into the fans and into the stands too, so that was a bit alarming. Claxton was ejected. I believe flagrant 2 was the call, which I think is correct. It was a very hard foul. That aside, Hawks was a strong game. Nets not too bad themselves, and especially Cam Thomas. This is the guy that people are talking about as a dark horse scoring champ conversation. Maybe not that far, but certainly a guy that can emerge as a top 10 scorer in the league, and was kind of in that realm last year anyways. 36 in the game, 5 boards, 3 steals as well, and 3 assists. Not just the scoring, but the scoring a big part of it. He was 7 of 13 from the floor. Along with Cam Thomas, they got 14 from Cameron Johnson, 13 from Dennis Schroeder, and then 16 off the bench from Jalen Wilson. Meanwhile, Ben Simmons, 6 points, 8 assists, 5 boards, 3 of 4 from the floor. Didn't attempt many shots, and that's always going to be a talking point. 6 turnovers, though. The playmaking always kind of the de facto should be always great with Ben Simmons. 8 assists to 6 turnovers is not the greatest game. Apart from that, you know, just some struggles for the Nets, perhaps, with 17 turnovers in this game, although the Hawks did have 16 themselves, but they were able to get it done just a little bit better all-around field goal shooting, even though they were worse from three-point range. Hawks led by Trae Young, 30 points, 12 assists. Seems, again, I think it's a little clearer in the Hawks situation and their backcourt situation. Young runs the show. Daniels, especially as a younger guy, I think of him more as a point guard too, but he's going to be the assistant to Trey. The last year or two, it was, I think it was just last year actually, DeJounte Murray and Trey Young, they're both kind of dominant point guards. They need the ball. Whose backcourt is it? And it was a strange fit. It was just getting a star to have a star. At least that was my interpretation of it. So better fit all around. Daniels, good game too. 15 points, 5 steals. Sensational defensive play, and he was 2 of 4 from 3. They also got 28 off the bench from Onyeka Okongwu. That's a career high for him, so a fantastic start. 8 rebounds, 3 blocks. Could be a sign of things to come. I wouldn't be surprised if within the first 10 to 15 games, as Clint Capella is aging, if Okongwu replaces him in that starting lineup, because he's a very young center with a ton of upside and huge start to the season here. They got 12 points from DeAndre Hunter, 11 points and 10 rebounds from Jalen Johnson, who also had 3 steals and a block himself. Ton of defensive stats for the Hawks. They were able to rack those up, and a big win for them in this one. Let's jump to the next game after that. The New Orleans Pelicans winning in at home against the Chicago Bulls, 123 to 111 the final there. Second half surge really getting it done here. Zion was out for the game with an illness. That didn't seem to matter, though. Brandon Ingram took over. 33 points. And how about Yves Missy, the rookie? Big game for him in his debut. Only 22 minutes played, but he had 12 points, 7 boards, a steal, and 3 blocks. That is not bad at all, especially for a guy that many people thought was going to be very raw and would take a lot of time to acclimate. So where the other option is really just Daniel Theis, and he's not bad either to start, but their center rotation could be decent. And if Zion's healthy, they should be all right, or they should be at least pretty competitive. Let's start with the box scores for the Chicago Bulls. 27 points for Zach LaVine. Looks like he's healthy. 5 of 8 from 3. Strong game. He'll be in the conversation, I'm sure, most of the season as far as the trade deadline and moving to a more competitive team. If he would have a lot of value, I think he would have value. Other guys, Nikola Vucevic, 21 points, 11 boards. He could maybe be in that conversation too, but maybe not as much. 15 off the bench from Jalen Smith, his first game with the Bulls. Nice little debut there. And 14 points from Josh Giddey, as well as 10 points from Kobe White. 0 of 5 from 3 after his kind of breakout year last year. That's not great to see. But again, it's only one game. Meanwhile, for the Pelicans, it was Brandon Ingram with the 33 points. We mentioned him. He was 3 of 5 from 3. 7 boards, 2 steals, a block as well. Tice was great too. 3 blocks, 2 steals. Not a lot of rebounds, but he got it done defensively. Helped him get the win. And that's all you can ask for. CJ McCollum, 23 points for him. He was 5 of 11 from 3. 13 off the bench for Jordan Hawkins, 12 off the bench for Yves Missy, as we mentioned, and then DeJounte Murray, 14 points, 10 assists, 8 rebounds. Good all-around game. The offense not great, but if he's getting high assists, high rebounds, and he's defensively sound, that's all the Pelicans really need, and the offense can just be kind of a nice bonus. Pelicans get the win here. However, there is a downside. Murray left at some point late in this game, I believe. I hope I'm not misreporting that. Either that or it was a discovery after the game of an injury that happened during game time. There's a fear, and this was reported by Shams Charani of ESPN, that DeJounte Murray may have a fracture in his left hand, and that may or may not be a lot of time that could impact the Pelicans. We do not have a lot of details at this time. That's definitely very concerning news. And for a team that, you know, was competitive the last couple of years, they have so much talent. The Zion question is certainly worth noting. But to lose a great point guard when he was so important to, you know, how we rated them going into the year, hopefully it's not very long. I'm hoping that this is like a week or two type of thing, that it's a small fracture, that he can get back on the floor as soon as possible. If he's not on the floor, then you probably have McCollum, you have Herb Jones stepping in. Again, solid bench for the Pelicans, but it's just a different fit and feel. McCollum, much more of a natural scorer than a point guard, and he can fill that role okay-ish. He's not bad by any means, but you want someone who's going to just be out there to run the offense and have that be the main focus. You want CJ to be able to just shoot the ball. That's where I think the Pelicans are at the best. So I think Murray's absence would certainly hurt this team a lot. Again, we're going to wish him the best as he deals with this potential injury, and we hope that it's not going to be a super long time frame for that injury recovery. That's our news on that one. Our final few matchups here. Firstly, the Charlotte Hornets in Houston get the win against the Rockets to start the year 1-0, 110-105, the final score in this one. Looking at the box scores here, the Rockets led by Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün, the two guys that signed recent extensions. We'll talk about that with our key news. Green with 28 points, Şengün with 25 points, 18 rebounds, as well as 4 steals and a block. What a start for Şengün. He could be in store for perhaps an all-star type season if he can continue to elevate and grow the way he has up to this point in his career. Outside of that, only 2 other double-figure scorers, 14 for Fred VanVleet and 13 off the bench for Amen Thompson. Meanwhile, the Hornets led by 2 guys mainly. One of them you'd expect, one of them not so much. Firstly, LaMelo Ball. Great start for his return. 34 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds. 4 of 12 from 3, a little rough, but he was 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Got the job done all around. 1 steal, 1 block. They got 10 from Miles Bridges with 9 rebounds as well. A big dunk from Brandon Miller. And then off the bench, how about Trey Mann scoring 24 points in this game with 6 rebounds on very efficient numbers? He was 4 of 8 from 3. That's a huge boost, and that's kind of maybe the reason they won this game. Without that, it would have been LaMelo Ball and a lot of other guys with not many points, but man, with a big production there, and they were able to get the win. How about that? Brandon Miller did sit in the second half as well with hip soreness, so that was also a factor. And then how about Grant Williams? He also hit the go-ahead 3 late. That helped kind of seal the win for him as well. Maybe should mention that. But some great news, some concerning news for the Hornets, but a good start to get that win under their belt. Again, they have promise. They could maybe slip into that play-in picture if all goes well for them this season. Then we jump to Utah, the Jazz, hosting the Memphis Grizzlies. Of course, I've mentioned I'm a Jazz fan. I hoped that the Jazz would be able to win this game. It was close. The Grizzlies did win, though, 126-124, your final. A lot of offense in this one. Ja Morant, I feel happy for him. Be able to come back after an off year last year. Only played 9 games. His first game this season, He's in the season opener. Solid game. 22 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds. Pretty good all-around shooting, and the supporting cast, great. Santi Aldama actually led the team in scoring, 27 points for him. They got 24 from Desmond Bane. Those three guys really stepping up. They also got 11 from Marcus Smart. Zach Edey, 5 points, 5 boards in his debut. And how about 13 points for Jay Huff off the bench? This is actually his first time scoring double digits in the past two seasons, so that's pretty phenomenal. Santi Aldama not only led them in scoring, he had the clutch baskets late to help give them the victory. And, you know, we mentioned the Jazz had a chance to win this. They were down double digits. They made a run to tie the game. Lauri Markkanen played great, 35 points and 9 rebounds for him. All the other starters in double figures, Walker Kessler and Colin Sexton, both with 16 points. They got 17 off the bench from Jordan Clarkson, who, of course, has been a previous Sixth Man of the Year winner. They got 12 from Taylor Hendricks and Keontae George. George also with 7 assists. Set 11 off the bench from John Collins. They had good all-around production. They had a chance to win it. They tied it. They had a ton of turnovers, though, in this game. They had 14 compared to Memphis's 12, so not the huge discrepancy you might expect. I think Memphis kind of got more points off those turnovers, but just not enough. Memphis able to win it. They have more experience. They know how to close out those games, and again, credit to them. Not a bad start, though, for Utah. A lot to like here with the young guys continuing to get minutes. Big lineup they're going with to start the year. Hendrick starting as kind of the small forward, either him or Markkanen, and then the other at the power forward, and then Walker Kessler, with the guards being Keontae George, Colin Sexton. There's a lot to like there as a Jazz fan. I think that they should be fairly competitive, but for now, they start the season with a loss. And then our last team, our last game that we have notes for at the moment, actually, no, that Clippers-Suns game did finish. The Suns spoil the Clippers' home debut in the new Intuit Dome. We'll get to that in just one second. Firstly, Golden State Warriors win in Portland against the Trailblazers, 139-104, your final score here. Three-point shooting. When have we ever heard that before with the Warriors? It was Steph Curry with some of it, but mainly Buddy Hield, Andrew Wiggins as well. Hield with 5 of his 7 three-pointers made. He had 22 points. Strong start. Andrew Wiggins starting in this game, 20 points on 4 of 7 shooting, and then Steph Curry, 3 of 7 shooting from 3 for 17 points. So those guys combined to go 12 of 21. Quick math there. That's pretty efficient. That's some great shooting. They got some threes, some threes from guys off the bench. 20 total threes for the Warriors in this one. They got 15 off the bench from Moses Moody after he signed his own little extension, so that's nice to see. 14 for Trayce Jackson-Davis, who's starting the season at the starting center spot. And then 10 points for Jonathan Kuminga as well. Just the offense, and not as much of that for the Trailblazers, although all 5 starters did score in double figures, and they had 22 off the bench from Scoot Henderson. The other starters being Jeremy Grant with 16. They got 15 from both Denny Avdia and Anfernee Simons. Avdia, by the way, kind of at the guard spot. They went with a big lineup here. Simons, Avdia, Grant, Tumani Kamara, and DeAndre Ayton. That is a huge lineup and could work out. It's a very interesting choice, but they struggled to shoot the ball just below 25%, even 24% from 3. And Ayton with 11 boards, solid game. Donovan Klinga only 12 minutes in this game, so we're going to have to wait for him to get more of an opportunity there. Interesting choices. I don't expect the Trailblazers to be super competitive this year. Warriors get the job done. Not fully a test of what the Warriors are capable of, but it's great to see Buddy Hield with that production at this early point in the season. And let's jump to that Clippers-Suns game real quick again. This was the Clippers' home debut in their new arena, the Intuit Dome. Watching the broadcast, that just looks like a fantastic place to both be a fan in as well as to play in. That looks like a sensational environment. Suns spoil the debut, though. They win 116-113, the final there. An overtime game, our first overtime game of the season. Back-and-forth affair. There were 17 lead changes in this game, 10 ties. Suns led by 14 in the second quarter. Clippers led by 10 in the fourth quarter. I thought the Clippers were going to get away with a win. Strong game from James Harden. Didn't quite work out that way. Looking at the stats for both teams, the Suns were led by, Well, let's actually start with the Clippers. James Harden led them, as I mentioned, 29 points, 12 boards, 8 assists, a near triple-double for him in the loss of Paul George and Russell Westbrook to the offseason moves, and Kawhi Leonard out with injury and some other guys out. Really had to step up, and he did his absolute best, and he got solid supporting numbers from Ivica Zubac, 21 points, 9 boards, 17 points for Norman Powell, who got the first basket in Intuit Dome history, so that's worth noting. 12 points for Derek Jones Jr., 11 off the bench for Amir Coffey. However, the Suns, led by Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, really stepping up with the scoring. Durant with 25 points, 7 boards, 3 steals. Beal with 24 points, 3 boards, a steal and a block, and then Devin Booker, 15 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds. And, excuse me, they did do the lineup that I kind of expected would make the most sense. Jones, Beal, and Booker out there with Durant and Nurkic. Seems like a solid lineup. I like that a lot more for the Suns going forward this season. Nurkic with 11 points, 9 boards. Tyus Jones with 11 points, 8 assists. Running the show, 8 assists and no turnovers. And that's what you want to see, and that's what you should be getting with Tyus Jones. Solid investment. The bench, a question mark, though. Not a lot of offensive production. Grayson Allen, 8 points. Didn't get a ton of shots. Didn't shoot that great when he shot it. So there's question marks there. I think there's still issues to iron out, but the Suns get the win. The starting lineup looked a lot more solid, a lot more well-rounded, and I think that's great to see for them. And I believe that should wrap up our starting lineup and really just game summaries from the first couple of nights of NBA action. So that's it for that. Let's jump to some of our next segments here, starting with our key news. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get right into that. Right. We've broken this up into sections. We've got transactions, which is going to be a bulk of it. A lot of moves related to setting the opening night rosters. We've got some injuries, unfortunately, to report outside of what we've mentioned with DeJounte Murray. And I believe we had one or two other players in our game summaries that we noted. And then some other just NBA general news to cover. Let's start with the transactions. We'll blitz right through these. A number of extensions right at the deadline to complete such extensions. Minnesota Timberwolves center Rudy Gobert signed a 3-year, $110 million contract extension. Player option in the third year. Makes a ton of sense to re-sign him there. Houston with a couple big rookie contract extensions. Firstly, center Alperen Şengün, 5-year, $185 million contract extension. He has a player option in the fifth year. That's reported from Bobby Marks of ESPN. And then Houston Rockets also guard Jalen Green signed to a 3-year, $106 million rookie contract extension. Player option in the third year. And this is surprisingly the first player with a 2-in-1 rookie extension for 9 figures. To have 2 years with a third-year player option on a 9-figure contract. So that's pretty phenomenal to see those kind of contracts continuing to rise with the growth of the game and the value of the NBA. Denver Nuggets forward Aaron Gordon opted into his player option for this the following year, the 2026 season, and then also signed a 3-year and the numbers get mixed up here because it initially was reported as a 4-year, $133 million contract extension. But then it was rewritten to show that it was actually opting into the player option and then doing an extension on top of that. But it was still set as 3-year, $133 million. So that amount is confusing, but it's 3 years after that player option. There's a player option in the fourth year of that extended contract. And there's also a trade kicker. So Gordon committing to the Nuggets long term, hoping to build them back up into a real contender, which they kind of still are, despite some bench concerns, but still a strong move to get him locked up long term. Atlanta Hawks forward Jalen Johnson signed a 5-year, $150 million rookie contract extension, breakout year last year. Great timing for that. New Orleans Pelicans forward Trey Murphy signed a 4-year, $112 million rookie contract extension. Of course, he's out to start this season, But that still makes a ton of sense to sign him on that type of a deal. Orlando Magic guard Jalen Suggs signed to a five-year, $150.5 million rookie contract extension. I think that's a little high, perhaps, and a lot of years, but they like what Suggs brings as far as the defensive identity, so can't fault him for re-signing him. Washington Wizards guard Corey Kispert signed to a four-year, $54 million rookie contract extension. Golden State Warriors guard Moses Moody signed to a three-year, $39 million rookie contract extension. And finally, Dallas Mavericks guard Jaden Hardy signed to a three-year, $18 million rookie contract extension. Other players that were in that conversation that did not get extended, I did not make note of, but we'll, of course, have a lot more to say about those players once it comes time for next offseason and those players become restricted free agents. We had a number of two-way contracts. Milwaukee Bucks center Liam Robbins, Chicago Bulls forward EJ Liddell, Clippers center Kai Jones, Memphis Grizzlies guard Yuki Kawamura, and he's actually 5'8". He's the shortest active player, so that's a fun note, especially with them having Zach Edey at 7'4" on the team. I think they recreated the picture, the Manute Bol, Muggsy Bogues infamous picture, showing the immense difference in those two players' height. I think they recreated that same picture on a media day, so that was fun. Charlotte Hornets guard Jared Roden, Los Angeles Lakers and guard Quincy Olivari, Orlando Magic bringing back guard Mac McClung, Dallas Mavericks and guard Jazian Gortman, Brooklyn Nets forward Tyrese Martin, New Orleans Pelicans guard Brandon Boston Jr., Detroit two players forward Cole Swider and guard Alondis Williams, Toronto Raptors signed forward Jamison Battle, Spurs signed forward Riley Minnix, and then the Washington Wizards waived and then quickly re-signed guard Jared Butler. So those are all the two-way contracts that are new. Finally, some waived players, some notable names here. Boston Celtics waived guard Lonnie Walker IV. He's out there available. New York Knicks and guard Landry Shamet. Also forward Chuma Okeke. Both those guys waived for the Knicks. Also TJ Warren. Not sure why I didn't mark him down. Minnesota Timberwolves and forward Keta Bates-Diop. Miami Heat forward Nasir Little. Golden State Warriors forward Kevin Knox II. And Brooklyn Nets guard Killian Hayes. All those players waived and available for teams to potentially add to their rosters. So opening roster set. Now we get into, you know, regular season, normal day-to-day type transactions. Some injuries to report. Of course, we mentioned Kawhi Leonard. News for the Clippers there. He's expected to be sidelined for an indefinite period of time to start the season with right knee inflammation. That's per Shams Charania of ESPN. Also from Shams, guard forward Chris Middleton of the Milwaukee Bucks is out to start the season after his off-season ankle surgeries. No real timeline given there. Cleveland Cavaliers forward Max Strus is expected to miss at least 6 weeks with a right ankle sprain. Oklahoma City Thunder center Isaiah Hartenstein to be reevaluated in 5 to 6 weeks with a left-hand fracture. New York Knicks and forward Precious Achiuwa, he will be reevaluated in 2 to 4 weeks with a strained left hamstring. And then Philadelphia 76ers rookie guard Jared McCain is day-to-day with a pulmonary contusion, per Chris Haynes of Turner Sports, actually. The others all being reported by Shams Charania. However, McCain did play in tonight's game against the Bucks, so that's great to see. It was actually a lung bruise or something of that nature. Definitely a strange and concerning injury. All of these injuries concerning, though, and we want to wish all these players the best as they work to recover from these injuries, get back on the court, get, you know, stable and staying on the court for as long as possible. And then finally, a number of just NBA general news items here, starting with the fact that NBA and Nike have renewed their deal for exclusive rights for uniform, the on-court gear, and also some apparel stuff, you know. They've renewed that deal for 12 more years. A lot of fans upset as far as the increasingly perhaps limited creative decision with some of the city uniform designs. But Nike and the NBA renewing this partnership through, I think, 2037, 2036 is the year, somewhere in that far off day. So they're going to be around for a while. Let's hope that both parties can figure out how to make this, you know, these designs more enjoyable, more just good in general, perhaps in the future. Because I agree that a lot of these city uniform designs have gotten stale, have gotten old, as far as what they seem to want to do year to year with a lot of the teams. I think the need to have city uniforms every year new uniforms every year is that's a tough order. If you had new uniforms every 2 years, I think that would make for a lot more interesting and well thought out designs. So we'll see if that happens. For now, partnership is staying. Philadelphia 76ers. The NBA is reportedly investigating Joel Embiid and the Sixers about his player participation and potential policy violations with his preseason absence, as well as how they're going to manage him to start the year. We had the same conversation last year. Sixers in one of the biggest offenders with this new player participation policy. We'll see what comes of this. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some sort of fine or issue, because they've been fined before. It happened multiple times last year. Just strange stuff. We'll see what happens there. Good news for the Sixers, though. Tyrese Maxey was awarded with the NBA Cares Bob Lanier Community Assist Award for his off-season work. So congratulations to him. Well-deserved for what he has done in his community. News for Boston and the Celtics. Boston itself, the city, has renamed the North Washington Street Bridge to be now known as the William Felton Bill Russell Bridge, to honor, of course, the late Bill Russell. And seems like a home run choice. Russell, such an impressive figure in the history of sports, much less in the city of Boston, and what he did for the Celtics with those 11 championships and breaking down color barriers as well. I mean, he was a huge figure in the 60s in the civil rights era as one of the biggest stars in basketball. So it makes a ton of sense. Happy to see that kind of stuff. News relating to Jerry West. Both the Golden State Warriors and Los Angeles Clippers are going to honor the late Jerry West with a JW initial court decal. I don't think we've quite seen that from the Lakers. Of course, they have the jersey patch, but still, he's fitting of any and all tributes that teams can give to him. And finally, just a general note for the NBA as part of the opening day rosters. There was a record-tying 125 international players on opening day rosters. So I thought that was a great note to bring up as we wrap up our key news here. Let's go ahead and jump into our first of the real Wednesday segments here. And we're going to do our 20 guesses segment for you here. If you're new to the podcast and you're not sure what 20 Guesses is, in all honesty, it's normally a segment that is a two-host segment, basically a game where one of the hosts picks a player, any player from NBA history, keeps them in mind, and will give the other host a career stat line for that player, and that's it. And the other host, who doesn't have the player picked, we'll try and use up to 20 guesses to figure out who that player is. We've refined the game format. There's now points based on how many guesses it takes and how many lifelines you use. There's up to 3 lifelines for clues such as teams played for, numbers or averages during his best seasons, as well as career accolades if they won any awards like MVPs, all NBA, all rookie, all those kind of things, right? Normally a two-host segment. I like to do it a lot, and I think that there's a way to do a different kind of version for it when it's just me hosting the show. And so what we've got for you here, and especially with the video podcast side of things on YouTube, if you haven't seen it and you're listening to the audio podcast, definitely check us out on YouTube for the visual side of things. but what we have is a graphic here that will also be on our social media pages as well. Quick plug for those. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We'll have this posted. We also see it up on the screen on the video podcast, and I'll read it for you here. We have a player picked, and these are the career stats for this player. Their career averages 14 points a game, 5.2 rebounds per game, 5 assists per game, 2.7 steals per game, 0.4 blocks per game, and they also played for 4 teams. We're giving one of the lifelines right off the bat. They played for the Bucks, Pistons, Raptors, and Spurs. That's all in alphabetical order of the team mascot names. One final note for you, and clue is in the tagline for this player that we've picked. Excuse me. This player was very much a statistical anomaly at guard for what they were able to do, their historic achievements. So those are all the clues we have for you for our 20 guesses. Again, it'll be on our social media. It'll also go out with tonight's newsletter, plugging all sorts of things for the podcast. But what will then happen is you have tonight and tomorrow to comment on social media, to think about it, see if you can guess who that player is without looking it up, of course. And we'll reveal it in our newsletter for the Friday episode. We'll reveal it on Friday's episode itself, and we'll also reveal it Thursday on our social media pages. So that's an incentive to kind of get you on the social media side. You can get the answer a day early. But that's the player. That's your 20 guesses. Again, here's a quick look at that. 14 points a game, 5 boards, 5 assists, nearly 3 steals a game as a career average. Just sensational numbers. And we'll reveal that player on both Thursday and Friday on various platforms. So that's our 20 guesses. And with that, let's go ahead and jump into our other main Wednesday segment, or one of our other main Wednesday segments, our weekly predictions.
Weekly predictions.
All right. This prediction is very much in response to our opening night game, specifically our two games from Tuesday night, and how one team in particular came out the gates hot. We mentioned it early in the show, talking about that game recap, how I would have this team in my weekly predictions conversation. And we're just going to go with this here. I'm going to make a prediction, and this is very bold, I think, for myself and what I usually do, that the Boston Celtics will win more games this season than last season. Now, they won 64 games last year. They would need to win 65 or more, which would be crazy. I mean, they're off to a hot start. I thought about also doing topics that are very much in the conversation at the moment, such as the Celtics will set the new record for most threes by a team in a season, things of that nature, you know, making a claim about the Celtics, you know, they're already going to defend their championship, they'll win the championship this season. Those didn't feel quite right to me. I felt more confident in saying that they would win more games this season. Despite Porzingis being out to start the year, I think that this has a very good chance of happening. And that's a prediction we're going to go with. Our first weekly prediction of the season. This will also be on our social media pages. And at the end of the season as well, we will check back and we'll keep tabs on these predictions to see how we do as the season progresses. So there's our first weekly prediction. That's most of the show. I have one quick note for us, if I can get this out before we do our This Day in History fact. And before my voice kind of goes here, but I wanted to share the full power rankings for all three of us guys. I'll start with Justin here, have it up on the screen, and these will also be on our website. That's where we'll have the full power rankings posted outside of the video podcast episodes. Here's the full power rankings for Justin if you wanted to get the visual there, where he has all teams ranked to start the season. Here is Wyatt's as well. When we do power rankings, we'll hopefully have this ready for you with every video podcast, so you can see the full breakdown, not just the top 10 teams, but all 30 teams and where that movement is, because we do write that up for all the teams, all 30 teams every week of the season, but we just don't go through it visually, or we haven't really up to this point. we could do it technically on the social media side. I don't think it would flow quite as well. I think it's better to do it on this side. It fits together a little bit better in terms of visual presentation. Here's my power rankings as well. And, because we talk about where we have teams ranked, we'll go over, oh, here's a team in the bottom third or the middle third that moved up quite a ways, went down quite a ways. We don't have a chance to talk about all 30 teams, though. And so we emphasize the top 10. That's where we focus, but we'll have this as well on the video podcast and the website, so you can get a full look at where we have all 30 teams ranked in our latest power rankings. So that's where we've got that. Just wanted to give that quick little update. And for now, let's actually jump into our This Day in History fact. Today, not going back super far, but it's related to teams and, well, players making their debuts with new teams.
Irving at three. He knew he missed it. Prince guides the ball. Back for Irving. Kyrie Irving buries it.
Oh, we're going to go hero ball.
6 seconds left in overtime. The Nets down by one. Irving lost his footing. Regathers. Fires. Off the mark at the horn. And the Timberwolves win it.
if you're very familiar with play calls and broadcasting from recent memory, you might know what that moment is. Today we're going back to October 23rd of 2019. Guard Kyrie Irving scores 50 points in his debut game with the Brooklyn Nets, setting a new record for most points scored in a debut with a new team. Despite his efforts, though, the Nets would lose in overtime to the Minnesota Timberwolves, 127-126. Now, as you heard in that little audio snippet or saw on the video, in the closing minutes, Kyrie makes this ridiculous move where he dribbles to the left, looks like he's going to lose the ball, but he kind of turns his body over, recovers the dribble in a crossover dribble, gets a look at actually a very clean mid-range jumper, misses the mark. If he had made that, that would have been one of the all-time great game winners in the regular season history, certainly in, you know, opening week history. Would have been an unbelievable shot. You can hear how incredulous Richard Jefferson was on the call. Didn't quite happen, though, but still a memorable moment. Kyrie's first game with the Nets. And that is it for our show, our This Day in History fact. Thank you again, everyone, for listening. We cannot thank you enough for your support on the show. We'll be back on Friday as we get back into our normal swing of things, our Monday, Wednesday, Friday shows. On Friday, we'll recap the games from Thursday and Friday. We'll also give you the latest news, and we'll get into our big Friday segments, our franchise focus. We'll be talking about the Philadelphia 76ers to start the season. We also have our Fantasy Fridays. We'll talk very briefly about what to expect there. And we'll probably also do our Hands of Time, our brand new segment as well. We'll forecast the upcoming games to wrap up that show. So it should be a great show for us. Again, thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you on Friday.